It's a blessing to be here with you today. It was really a unique meeting when I met with Bill at the Corner Bakery here just a little less than a year ago. And someone had introduced me to this gentleman to say, you've got to meet him because of your heart for fathers. And so we shared, and at first Bill's reaction was, well, I don't know where your role and your story fit with our prison ministry. But little did I know that just a few months after that, it was almost prophetic words, that I was able to go into a prison and conduct three services. And praise God, there were about 25 decisions that day. What I'd like to share with you, I love being a dad. I tell you, that's probably the greatest joy of my life. And they say, once a dad, always a dad, and that's very true. Just less than an hour ago, I get a phone call from my daughter, Dad? And you know that tone in their voices, and it's like, what do you need? Well, Dad, this lady came to pick up a cake this morning, and it wasn't ready. My wife doesn't know this story yet, so she's going to sit there surprised. And she said, the cake will be ready, and you're only 15 minutes from where it needs to be delivered there at the Crescent Court Hotel downtown Dallas. And so, being the dad that I am, I said, I'm on my way. About a week ago, my son Andrew called me and said, Dad, again with that tone of voice, our apartment building is without electric, a transformer blew. And we have an event today, and my pop-up carts that are built heavy wood on the fourth floor can't come down the elevators. And we need to get them down and get to a wedding because my son does a pop-up coffee and flour little cart at weddings and events. And I said, okay, how are we going to get that down there? Well, Dad, there's a stairwell. So understand, he's not on the bottom floor, he's on the top floor. So not four flights of stairs, eight, because you've got one going down and one going the other way. On the last round of steps, a man walks by me and he sees me panting and breathing heavily. He says, sir, can I help you? I said, absolutely, help. I love being a dad. And as was shared, I'm a father of three and a grandfather of one. And by the way, when I shared that breaking news about one on the way, that wasn't public knowledge. And I kind of posted it. And my daughter said, Dad, people are calling me thinking I'm pregnant, but it's actually my son and his bride. But anyway, the word is out, and I'm blessed about that. But back in August of 2021, we made a trip to Florida, where my daughter and son-in-law lived, and my grandson, Herschel. Don't you love that name, Herschel? It's a good country name. It's a good Texas name. We were going to celebrate Herschel's first birthday. So we went down there, and my son came down, and his then-fiancé and her parents came. And my son-in-law's parents were there. We were all there. It was a big life event to celebrate the first birthday, and it was our first grandson. So we celebrated a day early on August the 1st. And the next day, we were going to get up and go celebrate my now daughter-in-law's birthday. But before that day began, we were awakened by a phone call that the Cedar Hill police called, and the detective said, David, first he talked to my wife, and my wife was distraught. And I'm like, what is going on? He said, David, your son Adam's been involved in an accident. And he and the other driver didn't survive. And that was one of the hardest days of my life, to know that my son, Adam, that couldn't come with us because he wanted to go to Colorado on a family trip the next month, had been struck and killed by a drunk, wrong-way driver. Late at night, on his way home from softball, he played in an adult softball league. And it turned my world, our family's world, upside down. And my prayer is for you, and I say this with all sincerity, and often I say this when I speak, is I pray that none of you ever have to experience the pain and agony of what we've gone through and are going through. We were just overwhelmed by the fact that You think, why would God allow us to go through this? My wife and I have been in some type of ministry, whether church or Christian schools or chaplaincy, all these things, and it's like, you're not exempt from that, David. And so on my journey through this, I realized, I heard a song played at my son's celebration of life by a group, Shane and Shane. Some of you know them, local guys here that are worship leaders over here at a local church. And they came and to my church recently, and I got to thank them for a song called "Though You Slay Me, Yet I Will Trust You." And I remember sitting there at my son's celebration of life service and literally lifting my hands and praising God, even in the midst of such a tragic time in our lives. And one of the verses that one of the speakers in the song, if you watch the song by Shane and Shane, "Though He Slay Me," is Dr. John Piper. And he talks about 2 Corinthians 4:17. And this has been a verse that's really given me strength. It says, "For this light affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison." Beyond all comparison. And this suffering that it talks about is momentary. It's light in comparison to eternity. Yes, it hurts. This is now we're in our second year of grief. And yes, it's included counseling. It's included 3 rounds of grief share for me. And yet, God reminds me this is just momentary. That as we talk about people that we've had go before us into eternity, we know we're going to see them. But it still hurts. And, you know, as I've sat in grief groups, probably one of the hardest losses is that of a child, especially of an adult child that's been in your life for 27 years. 27 years. But it says, there's a reminder that not a millisecond of our suffering is ever wasted. And God has a plan for it. I heard a pastor last week at a conference here in Southlake. He said that your greatest pain will become your greatest ministry. And I sat there and I thought, I understand. I understand. I've worked in churches. I've had chaplain ministry. But what I'm doing right now has become a greater ministry in my life. It's part of me. It's part of my wife. It's part of our story. And I've been able, through this time of suffering, to what Paul says, that what? We get to know him. We get to know him through what? The excitement of the resurrection, the glory of that resurrection. But also it talks about knowing him in the fellowship of his suffering. His suffering. And I have just found that many, many times when I can't sleep or I'm restless, I just reach out to God. Sometimes I'm just still and try to listen. Sometimes I pray. Sometimes I read the Word. Sometimes I listen to worship music. But I have found that in this experience, I have felt closer to God. And I would dare say that in your lives, in those seasons of hurt and pain and suffering, you've come to a fuller knowledge of God, that relationship, that fellowship with him. But then also we become fuller in fellowship with fellow believers. And as you and your family go through difficult times and you have those days of suffering, you come together more than ever. And you have a community of believers. Hopefully you're in a small group or some other couples within your church body that come around you like our folks did, our friends. We need that. And they go through it with you. And they help you to support you to experience it. We had a home group that we hosted, and we didn't stop for months. And they went through it. And there were times we would just cry. But we all needed that together. Pastor Rick Warren from Saddleback Church said that he lost his son through suicide. And yet, for 26 years, he's been part of a home group that has helped him through those seasons of life. We need that. And also, going through a loss, it creates a greater sensitivity to other people. I get a lot of calls now when there's a company leader, there's an employee, there's a friend. David, there's been a loss. Can you talk to them? And I do. And men, I've asked God to never allow me to lose my tears. I don't want to lose my tears because I can truly empathize and understand. And you know, it's just like our relationship with our kids. When they have hurts in their life, the greatest thing we can do is be present with them. A chaplain that's a good chaplain for me knows how to just sit with a person that's suffering and be quiet. A ministry of presence. I was looking the other night as I was at a restaurant with my wife that we were looking around, and everybody was on their cell phones. And I watched families with their kids, and everybody was on the phone. Everybody. Our kids need our attention, our presence. Those texts can wait. Those tweets and all that stuff can wait. Our kids need our time and attention. One of the things I encourage men today, men with children and grandchildren, is spend quality time, because we never know when that last time will be. I'll never forget the last phone call I had when we were in Florida. Adam called and said, "Dad, I came by and watered your flowers, and I'm going to jump in the pool for a little bit. Is there anything else I can do for you?" I said, "No, thank you so much, son." I said, "Son, I love you." He said, "Dad, I love you." And what a gift to know that was my last conversation with him ever, but I got to tell him I loved him, and he told me that. And because of Adam, Bill's heard this story, is that Adam was very involved in the softball community. I thought the boy, all he did was, well, he was tired, he went to work, and just kind of had a boring life. He was 27 trying to figure life out. But when Adam passed away, there was a group of men and women out looking for him because he didn't show up to a golf game. And they knew something was wrong. And it come to find out that I shared with his roommate that Adam had been killed in the middle of the night. And that community of softball players over in Mansfield, there's a complex there called Big League of Dreams. Those men and women came together and in 4 days put together the largest home run derby that they had in the United States. And those men and women auctioned off bats and everything. And during the service, they were so excited. They presented my wife and I with a check that more than covered all the costs to bury our son. They loved my son. He had a testimony. And out of his love for life and zeal, and he had an attitude sometimes, I'm not going to kid you. They called it very competitive. I called it a hothead. But he loved life, and he encouraged people. And one of my friends said he got that from his daddy, because I'm such an encourager. And that meant so much to me to hear that. And so I've taken on a responsibility now. I connected with over 200 of his friends from softball on Facebook. And I regularly encourage them and tell them I'm there for them. They call me. My marriage is in trouble. I don't have a job. Can you pray for me? Can you come talk to me? And again, that's not part of my work. That's part of my ministry. It's part of my ministry. In fact, they asked me this weekend, they call it the Worlds, the Winter Worlds. And it's played all over the Dallas area. They said, "Pops, you need to come out here. We want to see you. We hadn't seen you in a while." And, it's just taking these opportunities. It's Monday, putting a flag on my son's memorial site at the crash site, where it says, "Don't drink and drive," in memory of Adam Wyant, August 2nd, 2020, that flag flies. I put a flag or something on that pole because it's just another road sign to people as they drive down the highway. But if even just one life is saved because of the message, don't drink and drive, it matters. It matters. We have a very unique cemetery plot for my son. It's a headstone, the shape of home plate. And it says, safe at home. One of the men that I met, he came out and he built batter's boxes, and we put gravel inside of them. And I'm inviting Adam's friends, probably on his birthday of this year, to come out to see it and again to share the story of why Adam was the way he was. Another man that I've encouraged for years heard me say I want opportunities to share my story, took me into the prison. And he's taking me back again this spring, and I'm planning to go with Bill when we get an opportunity there in Hutchins. And this is the new mission. This is what God has planned, that in my suffering, I can have great ministry. One of the things that one of the young men posted that very day after Adam died, he said, Adam, you was 7 minutes from home. And that just stuck in my mind. And so I thought, how can I take this and keep sharing the story? I had never written a gospel tract. And they look a lot different today. But the folks at my marketing department said, David, if you write this, and my wife edits it, she's an English teacher, we will develop it. And I brought a copy for you all today. And anybody that wants one, I'd be glad to send one to you. Or give them out to softball players. Give them out to your son's team or your daughter's team. I would be thrilled to do that. And I've been promised I'd get as many copies because on the back, I developed a little schematic of the plan of salvation by first base, second base, third base, home, and the stands and the fans in there, and talk about how our ultimate home plate is in heaven. And it's been a unique way to share Christ. And I've never had someone reject it, because I'll tell a gas attendant or someone at the grocery store, hey, can I share this with you? It's a story about me losing my son. And everybody takes it. And they not only see the beautiful picture of my son and my family inside, and even the headlights of a car, but they hear and see the gospel. And that's what we get to do. And as fathers, the greatest ministry you have are to your children. Because I think of the verse, what should it profit a man should gain the whole world and lose his own soul? But I'll take it a step further. What will it profit a dad if he gains the whole world? You're successful, you have a great job, great home, great cars, but you lose your own children. Don't lose them. Invest in them. Because like I said, you never know when you may get that phone call. And I'm not trying to scare you, but that's a reality of life. It's become my mission. And as I was getting a new devotional after Adam passed, I picked up a book, and it was like 52 things that a dad can do with his kids. And I began to read that, and I thought, my kids are grown, but I had grandkids. And I gave it to my son-in-law, the father of my grandson, and encouraged him to be a good dad, be there with him. And he does a great job. William is amazing. So blessed with him. And yeah, so let me encourage you that the greatest joy we can have in life is to be not just a father, but be a good dad. And John knows, John can tell you, I love my kids. I have a hard time saying no to them. My wife says, you need to draw boundaries, David, because sometimes they push me a little too hard. I'm the soft one, you know, what can I say? But thank you for letting me share your story, and hopefully I'll inspire you in some way. And like I said, I brought a copy of my tract that I wrote, and it's not about me. It's not about these opportunities I have, that it's not David. It's what God is doing. It's what God is allowing me to do. A couple weeks, I'll be back at the Cowboy Church in Waxahachie with some cowboys, having breakfast with them and speaking to them yet again. And I praise God for these opportunities. Because God is allowing all of us. He's writing our story. He's writing it. He does it well. And I got to be careful not to try to take the pen from him. Because I want to do some planning. He's got a better plan. Thank you so much.